Okay, everyone. I hope you none of you had any family or friends in that Surfside condo that collapsed. For now, we'll just push on with Lecture 3. Now, I mentioned last class, I mean, boy, sneakers and time and calendars and manufacturing, every possible thing in that lecture number 2. What's that about? Why did it jump around so much? Well, I said I would talk a little bit about it, and I explained about how, for example, in math, you're not jumping around, you're actually doing what is required to illustrate the principles and the concepts. In English, you give these different examples of a noun, of a verb, of a sonnet, of whatever it is. You need these different examples because you're not trying to memorize something. You're trying to get the concept. Now, certainly memorization plays a part. Just like physically, you want to cultivate these attributes. I gave you those examples. A football player would never run tires in an actual game. Things like that. But memorization is only one of those attributes. Most of you, or maybe all of you, memorized some of Shakespeare's sonnets from Hamlet or whatever when you were in high school. Most of you probably, or all of you, memorized some formulas in math. In whatever you look at, yes, there is a point to memorization. You see physics, you see whatever it is. That's valuable, but ultimately you need to understand the concepts and the principles. And the only way to do that is to see different types of things. If someone asked you, what was the point of the last lecture, lecture number 2? You can't say, well, it was about typewriters, because that wouldn't explain everything else in it. You can't say it was about Greek mythology, because it wouldn't explain everything else in it. You could say, not immediately, but ultimately after you do this a while and you start building up this way of seeing things, you could say, oh, it's about causality, cause and effect. That's a big one right there. You could say it's about human nature, things like money and greed and whatever it is. You could say a number of things, and really there are a number of lessons to be learned from that. That's what education really should be, getting that critical eye, that educated eye that's able to extract value. And, you know, there are many, many reasons for doing things this way. Another one would be, we want to actually look at things in a fresh way rather than just taking them in as we've always gotten used to them. I'm sure some of you have written essays or term papers or whatever it is, and you want to try and proofread it before you submit it. Well, most people, if not all people, have a little bit of trouble, or maybe a lot of trouble, seeing the mistakes they made because they wrote it, because they just wrote it. So what is one way around it? What is one way to get around this problem? Read it backwards. Read the term paper or essay backwards. It forces you to see it as though it's fresh, and then you can notice the errors rather than just skipping over them. Well, that's one of the things that helps here. When you keep jumping around and doing things, you know, it actually reminds me of driver's ed, now that I think about it. You can memorize where the cones are and everything like that, but really what you're trying to do is build up those skills, which I keep talking about. Learning how to turn left, right, park, parallel park, use your turn signals, everything like that. I mean, you could memorize, okay, left and then right, or we turn right and then left, or whatever it is, but really it's just about those abilities. And here I am like a broken record saying this stuff over and over again, and to a slight extent it'll take me the entire semester to really go through why we're doing things a certain way, especially with the notes. But let us move on, and let's start with some of these skills we need to recognize, these patterns, these concepts. One of them is, history is written by the winner. Ancient Rome, excellent example, one which all of you are probably familiar. It was an incredibly powerful military force. Rome just conquered and conquered and conquered. They fought hundreds of wars, not battles, major wars. They conquered and conquered, and according to history, every single one of those wars was in self-defense. Isn't that amazing? Not 99% of the time, every single one of those wars was fought in self-defense. Some small island country or some small tribe or whatever it was attacked the mighty Roman Empire, and in self-defense, Rome conquered and enslaved them. Every single war they ever fought was in self-defense. Well, guess who wrote those histories? The Romans. All our histories of those things are from the Romans, and it's not a coincidence, you know, history is written by the winners, that they were the good guys who are constantly being attacked. Now, mind you, history is often more complicated, just like life. History is nothing more than life. If you love life, you must love history, because history is thousands and thousands of years of life across the entire earth. And all the lessons in life are found in history, because again, history is life. So, one of those lessons is, it's usually more complex than it first appears. And the Romans had this belief that the gods would only support them in a war of self-defense. The gods would not be on their side if they were the ones who attacked first. So, for religious reasons, they kind of had to believe certain things. But still, you have this same idea. What about in America, where we are now? If you took this class decades ago, and you opened your textbook on, let's say, American history, every time the army won a conflict with the Native Americans, it was listed as a battle. The battle of this, the battle of that. But every time the Native Americans beat the army, what was it listed as? A massacre. The massacre of Little Bighorn. What massacre? Custer was going into slaughter. He thought he was going into slaughter innocent women and children, and he walked into an ambush against a superior military mind. He got beaten, and he got killed. But that's said to be a massacre because the Native Americans won. And history is like a window. We can see into other ways of doing things and learn from their mistakes. But history is also like a mirror. We see it's easy for us to look at others and say, oh, look how foolish they were. Can you believe those people? Look at how foolish they were. But in truth, it's reflecting human nature, which is constant. If you see the Vietnam War, all of you have heard of the Vietnam War, and I'm sure you've heard it referred to as such. Do you really think they call it the Vietnam War in Vietnam? Of course not. Especially since we went over there and invaded them. They call it the American War. They call it some other names as well, but this is the thing we need to wrap our heads around. The Rome, ancient Rome, thousands of years ago, naming their wars after whoever they fought, things like that. Well, here, what wars are we involved in now? The Iraq War? The war in Afghanistan? This is, you know, we need to see, has there really been progress? Now, certainly there's been some progress. Things have improved. History clearly shows that. But has it been enough progress? I think if we honestly evaluated ourselves, I think we'd have to say we still have a long way to go. And furthermore, along with that idea of honesty, first understanding that these principles, because they're concepts, like the law of gravity or let's say an economic law or something like that, physics, math, whatever we're talking about, whether it's 10,000 years ago or 50 years ago or yesterday or 10,000 years from now, these principles don't change. They're the same types of things. And it's just as applicable today as it was in the past. Furthermore, these principles that are operating at, let's say, an international level, apply at the national level. They apply at the state level, the local level, the personal level. These things at each of these levels, let's say the personal level, they apply in all these different areas, educational, business, personal, and like romantic relationships, friendship, whatever we're talking about. So these same, let's take this again, these biases. Say you have two friends who just had a fight with each other, okay? And either one of them comes to you to tell you what happened. Now you tell me, being, again, I said, let's be honest with ourselves. Are they going to tell you, are they going to try and be completely honest and even-handed and give you an unbiased account of what happened? No, they're usually not going to try and do that. And by the way, when they're telling you what happened in their breakup or whatever it is, what are they doing? They're telling you that history. Everything is history. Even the future is just history that hasn't happened yet. But here, just as you will learn, as you keep getting better and better at learning history and being critical in your evaluation of it and everything like that, yeah, they're going to be intentionally biased. And let's say they did everything they could to be unbiased. Let's assume that there are some people who would really try and take a completely objective view of what happened and try and relate it to you as objectively as possible. Still, as you know, it's going to be biased. We see things from our own perspective. It's just the way human beings are built. Even in a very physical way, if you were to put your hand in front of your face and look at it, then move it further away, further away, further away, it looks like it's getting smaller. Bring it back closer toward your face. It looks like it's getting larger. Your hand isn't actually changing size. We're not seeing reality. When we're at the top of a tall building looking down, we see people and objects very small, very tiny. They're not actually small or tiny. We just aren't equipped to see things objectively. If you see when in class, of course this is an online lecture, but let's say I tell my students, you know, don't look back. How many full pieces of paper are stuck to the back wall? And none of them really know it. If anybody guesses it, it's only because they guessed it right. They don't know. And it's not a memory issue. It's not that they forgot in the 20 minutes beforehand when they walked into class. It's not a memory problem. Perception is not only limited and flawed, but it's also based on intent. What does that mean? Perception is based on intent. We only see what we want to see. We only pick up on things that we want to pick up on. If you see all these different examples, I mean, lots of different examples, that in gender, for example, men and women notice very different things. If you see when we're driving, we're only paying attention to certain things. What you're looking at right now, whatever you're looking at, if I asked you to draw what your eyes see right now, how many of you would draw the nose in front of your face? No, because it's being filtered out. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, not at all. But we have to realize that we're doing this, that we're filtering these things out, because oftentimes what we're not seeing and what we don't want to see is actually what we most need to see. Because it's not just how many pieces of paper are stuck to a back wall. It's about life. It's about people. It's how we treat people. Another example, ladies. Isn't it really irritating how guys always speak to you like they're trying to teach you something? Well, this is this and that's that and That's where that term mansplaining comes from. But endless lessons of history. But another one is that things and people aren't necessarily as bad as they seem. In fact, a lot of times their heart is in the right place. I mean, if you want to be respectful to somebody, and respect is so, so important, I learned as I got older. you know, what is the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But the thing is, males and females have very different ways of communicating. And guys actually are speaking to you oftentimes in the way that they do want to be spoken to. They want it just mechanical, procedural. You need to do this, 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 and this. Devoid of any feelings and this and tan and whatever other emotions or things that go with it. So just explaining it, point A to point B, not how your day went, not how you felt, not anything like that. Just 1, 2, 3, it's over. Now that doesn't mean that it's right or okay or something like that, because that's another problem. Oftentimes when we try and do the right thing, but we don't recognize differences and diversity, it winds up having a negative effect. And we do need to recognize the differences and diversity. So if it was a misunderstanding, I mean, that's one thing, but also if there was no effort to understand, that's pretty bad as well. And you know, certainly we live in an overwhelmingly male dominated world, especially here in Miami. I've heard it's not as bad elsewhere, but here, females tell me it's like the Stone Age here in Miami. And that's another thing. When we talk about history, what are we talking about? There's this thing recently, I mean, over the past, let's say, 60 years, 50, 60 years, I'll use that number. We've started to reevaluate things. And I'll come back to this maybe later in the lecture, but race, class, and gender. Race, class, and gender have become the new, they call it the Holy Trinity in the history area. That's where all the action is. That's where the big research is, everything like that. And we see how biased history is. It's literally history. It's male history. Where are the women? Where is 50% of the planet? There's a few token things here and there, and you know, you see Betsy Ross, she sewed, and Florence Nightingale, she took care of the men, and it's kind of condescending. And you know, where's the woman hero who did the dishes and mopped the floors? You know, this kind of thing. Everything is looking after the men and women's work and whatever it is. So we've started to reevaluate these things, and now There's something called herstory. I mean, it's like a nickname for it, but it's women's history. And it's very well developed. Women have had a male-dominated system has greatly restricted females and what they could do and things like that. But they've still done a whole lot of stuff that's not in the history books, in the mainstream history books. And there you can get not only a bachelor's degree, but you can get a master's and even a PhD in feminist history and women's studies and things like that. So if you see class, what about that? So gender and now class. We know a lot about these Roman emperors. Huge, huge amounts. We know about the Egyptian pharaohs, we know about the Chinese emperors, things like that. But how much do we know about the actual working people in these empires? The actual individual soldier, not the general, not Napoleon, we have tons of stuff on him, but the actual individual laborer or worker here in American history. You see Vanderbilt, Rockefeller, Carnegie. These are very famous names, very, very wealthy people. But what about the many, many, many more who worked under them? Did these people who we know so much about, that Roman emperor, that Egyptian pharaoh, did that Egyptian pharaoh build any part of those pyramids at all? One single brick? No, not at all. So why are we, you know, it's been said, why are we focusing on these people? And now, just like you have herstory, things like that, you have history from below. History from below is studying the average regular people or even the lower class people. who are just sometimes even the slaves and things like that, to see how they live. Now, we have far fewer sources, if any, on them, so it's more challenging, but also maybe more interesting. How we find out about them is we borrow from other fields. We borrow from anthropology and geology and paleontology and things like that. We excavate their burial plots. See how they live, where they what do their bones tell us about their day-to-day diet and how much labor they performed. What kind of injuries did they sustain? How well nourished were they, or how poorly nourished were they? What were they buried with? What kind of items? Different things like that. So, gender, class, and now race. As you know, the history, at least in the West, is really the history of white people, although that's a more modern phenomena. We'll learn that, you have different civilizations. Everything is cyclical. Every single thing is cyclical. And civilizations are no different. They have their ups and downs. And most recently, in the past few centuries, Europe has been in ascendance. And they've been writing the histories and sorting through the histories and everything like that. And you get a very biased history. You will see, even when I gave the example of the American history textbooks, I used the term Native Americans. You may know that's not what they would have been called in those old American history books. What would they have been called? They would have been called Indians. Now, they were not from India. I am from India. I am Indian. They were not at all Indians. And in fact, there's an even more there's a really racist term to describe them, red Indians. And there are these comments, oh, dots, not feathers, or feathers, not dots, in that case. And, it gets to be pretty outright overt, where they were called savages and different types of names like that. Now, the question, because the most accepted term today is usually Native Americans. Many tribes use that term Indian still because they've been referred to in that way for so long. They're categorized that way officially, everything like that. And of course, it was created, as many of you know, because Columbus, when he sailed across the ocean, he believed he had encountered the East, and he believed that these people were from India. In fact, that's where the West Indies gets its name. He thought it was the West of India. But the most accepted term by everyone, the most politically correct or inoffensive term is agreed to really be Native American. Okay, fine. What would be an issue with this term, Native American? What would be some of the things wrong with this term, Native American? Well, one problem would be they are not really native. They came over here a very long time ago, mind you, a very long time ago, but even they are not indigenous to this land here in the continental United States. In fact, that's why they have Asiatic features. And certainly you could say, oh, this was such a long time ago, this is thousands of years, many thousands of years, you should consider them native. Well, where do you draw the line? I mean, what about the people who came over here hundreds of years ago? What about people like the Irish or the Chinese or others who have been here for many generations? Some would argue strongly that, frankly, if you were born here, you're a Native American. That's what it should be. There are other issues other than just how long a group has been here. Maybe they don't want to be called American. After all, the horrible experiences that they've had, many cultures have had, maybe they don't want to associate themselves and name themselves after the people that did these things to them. And again, this is... we're using these examples, and it's definitely food for thought, and it definitely makes you think. But even in a more specific sense, these principles relate in very practical ways all the time. Many of you are Hispanic. Okay, fine. Well, what is the problem with that term Hispanic? Why would somebody be offended by being called Hispanic? Well, first we have to see what that term really means. It means from Hispania. Hispania is the Iberian Peninsula. Don't worry about that term, but it's basically Spain and Portugal. Okay, that's what Hispanic means. Therefore, basically, these are the European, white European imperialists who came over and enslaved and conquered the people in Central and South America. They were, you know, Jewish people don't call themselves Nazis. Why would these people in Central and South America want to, and other regions nearby, Cuba and whatnot, why would they be calling themselves Hispanic? What about other problems with this term Native American? What about, okay, say you call them Native American, what about the Eskimo in Alaska or the indigenous people of Hawaii? And by the way, there's technically there can be a difference between indigenous and aboriginal, but I'm just speaking in a general way right now. So what about them? I mean, these people have nothing to do with the Native Americans in the continental United States. So, but they would certainly be native to the regions. The Polynesian type people of Hawaii, the Inuit or whoever it is of Alaska. But why would we be grouping them in with these people in the continental United States and even the ones here? There are many, many different tribes. That's another problem with this term Native American. It generalizes and homogenizes and basically groups everybody in, even though there are many different many different religions, languages, traditions, ways of doing things, ways of life. I mean, radically, radically different. And here we are just lumping them all together. I mean, it reminds me of this issue with Africa. People talk of Africa as a country, but really we need to remember it is a continent with about 54 different countries. I don't recall, I haven't checked recently, but it's 54 or 55 different countries, radically different from each other. Completely different languages, socioeconomic statuses, many, many different aspects. I just mentioned Africa. If you look at a map, a world map, and you see, in fact, just looking at the whole map, you look at it, why is north up? This is one of those times when I would like to have, I really wish we could have class in person and I could get your answers and everything like that and maybe show you the map in class, but why is map up, north up? Why does someone say, well, I'm flying down to South America? Why don't they say I'm flying up to South America and then I'll fly back down to America, to the United States? Students sometimes say, well, it's because of the North Star, because of the compass, you know, points north. Well, why? That's fine, it points north, but why is north up? You know, why aren't we following the North Star down instead of following it up? So this is if a spaceship came flying in a certain way, it might think North America was above South America. But if it flipped over 180 degrees and came the other way, it would think South America was on top and North America was on the bottom. So what? Well, it could be, and in fact, really, it is. Not only is history written by the winners, maps are drawn by the winners as well. And the time at which these maps were being drawn, Europe was just coming into extreme ascendance. Europeans, like in 1569, I believe was the year, but Gerardus Mercator, 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 if you've ever heard that name in connection with maps, super, super famous, kind of like that previous lecture with Goodyear and rubber, super, super famous. So these Europeans now during the what's called the Age of Discovery, they drew these maps and they put themselves on top. Europe is in the north. And why did they do that? Well, it is often seen height is equated with dominance and with superiority. The penthouse is on the top, not on the bottom. The best offices and a business are at the top, not on the bottom. And if you are above someone physically, it's kind of like metaphorically, you are also above them in other ways. So basically, they put themselves at the top, and the white people put themselves at the top, and the black and brown people at the bottom. Now, as I said earlier, oftentimes it's not as bad as it seems, and in fact, it may not be any kind of negative intent at all, because there could be very good reasons for it. Water flows from top to bottom, certainly. And more of the world's major rivers flow from north to south than south to north. There's a very famous river which flows south to north. Some of you may, or probably not, but some of you may know which one that is. In Egypt, it is the Nile River which flows from south to north. And guess what? In ancient Egypt, the maps had south on top and north on the bottom. It could also be because when you make a globe represents the earth. You know, a map is a flat representation and a globe is a more accurate round rendition. Considerably more landmass is in the northern part. So it makes sense to put that on top so you look down at the globe rather than have to lift it and look up at it. It's easier to look at, in other words. Now, just as with history, if maps are drawn by the winners, it depends on who is winning. These maps were drawn during the time of Europe's ascension, and earlier than that, they were in what is called the Dark Ages, Europe's Dark Ages. Now, that term is problematic. We history people tend not to like it anymore. We tend not to use it because it's more complex. But during that time, many, many hundreds of years, Europe was really in a bad situation here, fairly primitive. And really, the Asian countries were seen as the ideal. They were prospering. They were successful in the East. And during that time period, guess which part of the map was on top? The east was on top. It was not the north or the south. It was the east that was on top, the west that was on the bottom, and the north and south were at the sides. In fact, now the east is known as the Orient. Okay, just like the Orient Express, that train. So the east is known as the Orient. But you have to be careful because I may bring this up again. You refer to objects. You can refer to objects as oriental, a vase, a rug, something like that. You don't refer to people that way. It's offensive. But here, okay, it's called the Orient, and some of you may have heard the phrase to orient yourself, or you've heard of orientation. What is the meaning of that? It's where you get your bearings and you understand where you are and where you're supposed to be going and everything like that. This was just the title, the Orient. Okay, it's just the title of the East. And by the way, the West is called the Occident, but very few people know that or need to know it. But the Orient was just the name of that area. But since it was so important, since it was so crucial, the money, the culture, everything that was going on there, you would face that direction to see, to basically know where you're going, where your future is supposed to be, everything like that. Now, it's also because the sun rises in the east, okay? But it's also because the area was so important at the time. And without getting too too deeply into this, I mean, the East was also where Jerusalem would be located. So Christianity, very important, everything like that. So there, as with everything, there are complications in life and history. And here, if you get back to what I was originally trying to say, if you do look at a world map, any world map, really, you would see that, any Mercator projection, something like that. You see, as I said, with race, class, and gender, and things like that, we have started to make these corrections. People have noticed these things and said, this is really unfair. So there are different renderings now, Peter's projections and things like that. But still, the average world map you look at, if you pull it up on your computer, just put map of the world or something, some flat map. I'm not talking about a globe or a simulated globe. You will see what's called the Greenland problem. What on earth is the Greenland problem? Africa is rendered the same size as Greenland. Africa is a gigantic continent. Gigantic. It is humongous. If you see, I believe it is 14 times larger than Greenland. So why is it rendered the same size as Greenland? It is so large, just so you know, it has one desert larger than the continental United States. The Sahara Desert is larger than the entire United States minus Alaska and Hawaii. So it is, and by the way, that's another thing. There are reasons why Africa has had some problems, these African countries. There's all corrupt leadership and things like that, but there are also ecological reasons for things that went wrong. Now, why is it rendered so small? Well, height is equated with dominance. We said that. But it's also that size is equated with importance. And if you are a larger country, you are more important. And if you are a smaller country, you are less important. Now, once again, we have to try and be understanding that there are legitimate reasons for these things. There's oftentimes this knee-jerk reaction to blame someone, to accuse someone, anybody. Who is to blame for this? It's terrible. Who is the evil person? Who is this? Who is that? The evil white European males are racist, imperialist, gender bias, this, that. But actually, we need to look at things in an even-handed way. We need to see, I mean, firstly, that all these different cultures, they distort things in their own favor, and sometimes radically, wildly so. If you look at this, which is, clearly it's a distortion. You know, the size of Africa, if you want to see, just so you know, I'm not giving you an opinion or a biased perspective or anything like that. Go ahead when you're ready. Look at Africa on a conventional flat map. Really, most of them will have it the way I described, although the new Peters projections and things like that will fix it a little bit. But look at it on a flat map and then look at it on a globe or even a picture of a globe that you can pull up online. You will see the difference. You will see the gigantic, huge difference. And there's a reason why I say globe, and earlier I was saying that, but I corrected myself. Because there are very legitimate reasons when you take a map, when you take any three-dimensional space and try and flatten it to a two-dimensional plane, it gets distorted. It is impossible to avoid that. If you if you're making eggs in the morning, you broke that egg in half, you have half a shell, try flattening it out. Try just put it on the counter and flatten it out, and you'll see it will get distorted. Now, when that happens, everything basically gets distorted. Distance, size, direction, all different things get distorted a little bit. But if, as these people were doing, you're trying to get your map for navigation, to get to places, you need the distance as close to accurate as possible. You need direction as close to accurate as possible. You can do that But then things like size get massively, massively distorted because you're trying to keep everything else accurate. All the inaccuracy goes toward the characteristic of size. And so we see another lesson here, that it is actually very difficult to capture and render and define reality itself. Even with something that should be objective, you would think geography, I mean, my goodness, how much more objective can you get than something like that? But for example, talking about north and south and everything like that, let's look at within the United States. Is Florida part of the South? Is Florida, well, most people would say yes, Florida is a southern state, but is Miami a southern city? Most people would say no, it is not a southern city. When you say something like that, you think of Charlotte, you think of Atlanta, Georgia, you think of things like that. Very few people would say Miami is a southern city. Some people don't even consider it American, they consider it South American. I would say it's more of an international city, especially because you have many different groups here that, you know, we get Caribbeans. You have a lot of Caribbeans. We just not always notice them because they're concentrated in certain areas. You see, what about Alaska? Alaska has been called the northernmost southern state. Why on earth would it be called that, the northernmost southern state? What does that mean? Well, geographically, it's as far north as you can go in the United States, clearly. But in terms of culture, in terms of their way of doing things, their view of government, of government role, a small government, gun rights, religion, all these types of things, they are very close to the southern way of doing things. If you see Missouri, what about Missouri? Is Missouri a southern state? Some people would say so. Others would say, no, it's not a southern state, it's Midwestern. What about Texas? Is Texas a southern state? Many would say yes. Other people would say no, it's western. Other people would say that part of it is western and part of it is southern. You know, it's a very large state. We could get into this itself pretty deeply about how that's a good example of how really things and even people are never just one thing. They're multiple things with multiple facets and things like that. But moving on, and the Middle East would be another good example right there, where we think it's an Arab area. But there are many different ethnicities there, not just Arab and Jewish and things like that. Iran is not Arab at all. There are Persians. And there are other ethnic groups there. And by the way, what did I just say? I said Iran, not Iran. Iraq, not Iraq. Here, we need to see that it's not Italy, just because it's spelled with an I. It's Italy. It's not Israel. It's Israel. It's in the same way, Iraq and Iran and we want to at least be able to pronounce these different countries' names properly. If you see Barack Obama was the first American president to properly pronounce Pakistan instead of Pakistan. So what about that term, Middle East? I mean, what's going on there? Middle East is not a racist term, not an offensive term, right? So what's going on? Well, let's see how this term actually came about. There's actually an American, very famous naval person, the most famous American naval person ever, Alfred Thayer Mahan, M-A-H-A-N. any of you are into naval history or warfare or anything like that in America, he is very, very important as an individual. Not to us, but in that area he is. And, okay, he said you have Japan and China in the Far East. It's east of them, and it's in the Far East. Let's name this area in the middle, which we have to deal with and talk about here. Let's call it the Middle East. Well, again, what's wrong with that? Well, the problem is we shouldn't be identifying everything, especially labeling others, just in terms of their relation to us. That's very... the whole world, in this case, it's literally seeing the whole world revolving around us, when in fact it does not. If any of you live in the Keys or maybe in Homestead or something like that, you wouldn't say that Kendall Campus is in North Florida. Just because it's in Florida and north of you doesn't make it in North Florida. Because everything in the world doesn't revolve around you. There's this joke, how many blondes does it take to screw in a light bulb? One, she holds it up and lets the world revolve around her. So that's space. What about time? What about our... Surely time is not biased. Well, when we look at dates that are being used, you look at, for example, BC and AD. What do those terms stand for? BC means what? Well, most of you know it means before Christ. What does AD mean? Well, it does not mean after death. If it meant after death, you have before Christ, you have after death, what about the 33 years that Jesus is supposed to have lived? So it can't mean after death. It stands for Anno Domini, which, as some of you may know, and in Latin that means in the year of our Lord. In the year of our Lord, because this calendar is based on Christianity, and everything is based on that really important, massive event. And Christianity, you can tell from the name, it's all about Jesus Christ. And so when Jesus is born, that's when the calendar is set to start. You have before Christ and then Anno Domini in the year of our Lord, which is Jesus has been born to the earth. And that's where we start dating forward. Well, okay, what's going on with that? When is year zero? What happened in year zero? Now that's a trick question. Nothing happened in year zero because there is no year zero. There is 1 BC and then it goes immediately to 1 AD when Jesus was born. But that's not the way time and dating and frankly math is supposed to work. If you give birth to a child, if any of you have children, you give birth to a child, you don't say, my one-year-old. 1 year after the child is born, then you say, okay, my child is 1 year old. So what happened? Why didn't they start the calendar at year zero? Well, as I said, this is Europe as well, and Europe basically had its downfall for about many hundreds of years. Let's call it 1,000 years. It's approximately 1,000 years. From the time Rome fell to, let's say, the Age of Discovery. Let's say things like that. So around 500 to around 1500 AD. And I'm going to use those terms for now, BC and AD, just for a moment. So it was during that time, in fact, early in that time, that this Christian calendar was developed. And again, this is the time when Europe is extremely primitive. Long time that Europe was extremely primitive. So they did not have zero. They did not understand zero, what it was or what it could be. And the numbers, right now, the numbers on your watch, the numbers on your keyboard, the numbers on your computer screen, on your cash, in your pocket, everything like that, those are called Arabic numerals. As opposed to Roman numerals, you guys probably know what those are, or probably all of you. These are Arabic numerals, the kind that we use every day, all the time. Now, they were called that because the Arabs brought them over, but in fact, they originated in India. Math, as it exists today, was really developed in India, overwhelmingly. And that is also where zero was created. A few cultures had zero independently, but never as sophisticated as, or nowhere near as sophisticated as it was in India. And the Arabs learned of it, took it back home, studied it, translated it. And really, the numerals are mostly Arab, but the concepts and things like that, although the Arabs developed them, they were originally Indian, like zero, as I say. And when they brought it over to Europe, Europe didn't know that they got this from India. They just know that it was brought over by the Arabs, so they called them Arabic numerals. It's interesting how a lot of these things work. I mean, even the Greeks that I've mentioned a few times here, they're not Greek. Just so you know, even if you go there today to modern Greece, you question them, they'll tell you, if they know their history, which they do, they're not Greek, they're Hellenes from Hellas, not Greeks from Greece. What happened? Well, back to that, you know, I'm jumping back for a minute, but that original idea of history being written by the winners. One tribe of the Hellenes were the Graeci. And when they encountered the Romans, they said, okay, we're the Graeci. The Romans misunderstood and thought all the Hellenes were Graeci rather than just this one tribe. So it would be as if some of us went to another country and said, hello, we're from Miami. And they thought our whole country was Miami and we were the Miamians. So the Romans wrote down, these people are the Graeci from Graecia. And today we pronounce that Greeks and Greek. So that's how the name came about. And again, just history is written by the winners. And that phrase itself is kind of complex, but that's, you know, we can look at it for what it is right now. So zero was invented in India. The Arabs learned of it, brought it back, brought it over to Europe, and the Europeans called them Arabic numerals, but they didn't like, even when they finally did get this idea of zero, they didn't like it. They actually thought it was a tool of the devil, because how can something mean nothing, and nothing means something? Even today, just so you know, they don't teach kids zero in order. They don't teach them 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They teach them these normal numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up, and then later on they come back to zero, because it's such a difficult concept for people to understand, these little kids or uneducated people during the Dark Ages, that sort of thing. So already, this is not all these years after, let's say, 2020, which we have completed. That is not 2020 years after the birth of Jesus is supposed to have been born. It is 2019 years, because they started the calendar at 1, even though they should have started it at 0. There's another problem. When was Jesus actually born? Well, it wouldn't have been 1 AD. It's, we think it was maybe 5 years, approximately 5 years, maybe 6, maybe 4, maybe 7 years earlier. Because when these dates were being created, this was not at the time, this was centuries after the fact. People are putting this together through research and everything like that, and they didn't get it exactly. But we have, especially through astronomical phenomena mentioned in the Bible and things like that, we have much better ideas of when things actually happened than these people who are primitive and centuries after are trying to get exact dates for these types of things. And the person who really created this Christian calendar, who set the origin date and everything like that, his name was Bishop. Bishop Usher. I think his last name is spelled U-S-H-E-R. I think. But he actually also counted further back, all these people who lived in the Bible, Methuselah, Abraham, everything like that, all the years they were supposed to have been alive, and then back to the creation of the earth. And that's where we have this idea. You have these creationists, Christians who are creationists, who take that Bible exactly literally, the way Bishop Usher did, and they say the earth is 6,000 years old. In fact, a lot of people believed that for a long time until science came up with more detailed answers using radiological dating and things like that. But there's actually, I believe, a creationist museum where you can go there and you'll see human beings riding dinosaurs, stuff like that. It's not something we should laugh at or anything, because we really don't know what's there, but it's contrary to the facts. We see science, we see what reason tells us and everything like that. In fact, this idea of creationism and the earth being 6,000 years old may be due to these mistranslations which frequently occur, including with the Bible. I can give you several prominent examples, maybe later on in the semester I will, important things which have traditionally been mistranslated. Maybe you guys also only know the mistranslation. You know, maybe years for them were very different from years for us. There are many different ways to frankly handle a calendar. We can get into that. I mean, one of the issues that came up, as I say, maybe 60 years ago, I'm going to very roughly estimate, people started reviewing how we do things and reevaluating how we do things like the calendar. It is based on Christianity. But the majority of the earth is not Christian. So why should everybody be doing something based on one group's beliefs? Shouldn't it be something more universal, something more open-ended, things like that? And so they changed it. But at the same time, they didn't want to redate everything in existence. They wanted to keep it as close to the same thing as possible, just not biased in favor of Christianity and against anything else. So what they did was they just changed it, and this is the way you'll probably see dating today. Instead of B.C., before Christ, they have B.C.E., before Common Era. And instead of A.D., Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord, they have CE, Common Era. So that's the era, the dating system and everything that we commonly used. So that's called Common Era. And then before that, we call it BCE, before Common Era. So it's the same as AD and BC in effect, but this is a little more inclusive and a little more open-ended. I'm just going to throw this out there. Maybe I should leave it out, but there are two other, there are other notations that you might see when it comes to dating, and they're really used when you have really big numbers, when you have huge amounts of time, rather than BC or AD and BCE and BC, I mean BCE and CE. You will sometimes see BP or YA. If you're talking about when the dinosaurs died out, well, 64 million years ago, YA. Or you might see something else, BP, before present. It might be millions of years. It might be billions of years. Basically, where this a few thousand years is pointless. So you don't need to say BC or AD or anything like that, because you're rounding off to sometimes millions of years. That little bit is insignificant. Now, as I mentioned, there are different forms of dating, different dating systems. Most of us see things from our own perspective, see the world from our own perspective, and the Christians did the same, and so did most other people, frankly. The ancient Romans, for example, which are not a great example because they were a real mess. Their calendar was a mess. But they started their calendar, and not at the founding of their civilization. Not at that. but rather from the founding of their republic. So originally the Romans were under kings, then they founded what's called a republic. You will learn about that fairly soon, because our government is a carbon copy, a photocopy of the Roman Republic, with one major change, which we copied from someone else who got it from studying the Roman Republic. But anyway, so they started their calendar with the founding of the Republic and then kept track of years through the naming of their leaders, by naming these years after the leaders of those years, which were called consuls. I'll explain that as well later on. Now, the Greeks. The Greeks had a dating system based on their Olympiads. I might have mentioned, I think I did, that they are sports fanatics. They were. And they loved competition, these athletics, these running, wrestling, all these types of things. And so they had a competition every year, basically, but every 4 years, I mean, it alternated over these 4 years. And during one of those 4 years, it was the Olympics. Olympics. 776 BCE was the first recorded Olympics, the first recorded one. And that's when the Greeks began their calendar. And since it was every 4 years, they have these four-year periods, these what are called Olympiads, to measure their time. And then in 394, I believe, AD, or CE, you could say, the Roman Emperor Theodosius I suppressed them, because then Rome had become Christian, and the Olympics, you know, Olympus, everything like that, were meant to honor Zeus and the pagan gods. So that was not acceptable to the Christians. Romans had become Christians, and the Romans banned them in 394 CE, I believe. It was in the 390s for sure, around 390. Our modern Olympics was brought back, I think I mentioned this, in 1896. A Frenchman brought it back. But anyway, what about Islam, another religion? Its first year of their calendar is our 622 CE. That is the date Muhammad immigrated from Mecca to Medina. So a lot of people criticize Christianity as being racist or biased or whatever it is, but actually, these biases just exist in human nature, and they happen all over the world in different cultures and different ways and different things like that. And that's not to say we just accept it, but we do need to have a proper context here. China. China's calendar was based on their emperors, and they were named after these zodiac signs, sort of. The year of the dragon, the year of the rat, that kind of thing. Actually, during the French Revolution, absolutely devastating. French society was completely upended. They thought that the religion was superstition and mysticism, and they needed to get rid of it and replace it with pure reason. And the French created the decimal system, and they wanted to put everything on this decimal/metric system, where everything was a base unit 10 and things like that. So, for example, minutes had 100 seconds. I believe hours had 100 minutes. There are 10 days in a week. You know, that sort of thing. The thing is, this never actually caught on, not even in France. And the reason is, you know, the ultimate reason is, it comes down to what is practical, what is functional, more than ego, more than oppression or discrimination or anything like that. Here we have this metric system with on base unit 10, and it seems mathematically precise and everything like that, but the farmers, the day-to-day workers, they really didn't find it useful. They didn't find it practical, and so they didn't use it. Even these other things I mentioned, like why north is up. I mean, one big reason is it goes back, like so many things, to the ancient Greeks. One in particular, his name was Ptolemy, spelled with a P. I believe his name is P Ptolemy. Ptolemy. And he was the one who really put north at the top. And he was the first one anyway. But again, it's really probably for practical, functional reasons. It's you could look at it a different way. You know, why do clocks, why do the hands move from left to right? Why not right to left? Well, because it was meant to simulate a sundial. A sundial is basically this thing that looks like a fin on a circle, and the sun, as it travels through the sky, casts a shadow, and it moves. And because it was devised in Egypt first, it's because it's in the southern part. Egypt is in Africa, of course. The shadow of the sun traveled from left to right. If it had been developed in the north, it would have gone from right to left, and our clock hands would go from right to left. Now, my point, I just happen to bring that up because this is not some conspiracy to prejudice the world in favor of Africans and against Caucasian Europeans or anything like that. It's just the way it worked out functionally and practically. And I don't mean to compare the two. I mean, no one is equating lesser or greater importance to a country or a people because of which way the clock's hands go. They would do it for the size and shape of a country, for the size and height or latitude of a country. So I don't mean to make the make it seem that they're equal. But again, you see, even as we're going through this, we're cultivating the attribute of judgment, which is so necessary in history, and frankly, so necessary in day-to-day life. Now, using these mental abilities that we're cultivating, we see that everything is not just some sort of exploitation or victimization. That's kind of a knee-jerk reaction, especially in our time and age. That someone is oppressing someone, and it's this and that. Yes, that oftentimes goes on, and we have to be very vigilant about that. But to see everything in that way, or primarily in that way, it's very shallow and myopic, and it's a lazy way of thinking. And it's frankly, most importantly, it's just not true. You look. I was just talking about. The clock and everything like that. Clock. The word clock comes from the word kluge, which means bell. And, you know, I remember when I was in high school, I was reading the Stephen King book, and a character in it says, "Oh, what is that thing on your wrist?" And he says, "It's a watch, and it tells the time." And he says, "Ah, and of course it's called a watch, because what else would you do with it?" But the thing is that later on, much later in my life, I looked into it and everything like that. And indeed, you know, clock is from kluge because it was just bells being rung and it was still called a watch. So that can't be why it's called a watch. If there's nothing to look at and it's still being called a watch, it can't be because you watch it to tell the time. Why is it called a watch? Well, what happens is those bells have to be rung by people. And the people who are up there, now mind you, the bells are being rung because the church wanted people to say prayers, and they wanted to say them at certain times in the day all together. And the only way people would know that is by hearing the bells rung. So the church had throughout the day, various points of the day separated at different times. Noon was one of those times, but noon was not 12 o'clock. You know, this is another thing we get from history. The things we look at now, you know, Flagler Street was there, but originally it was a different street than what it is now. But anyway, so who is ringing these bells? Well, you have people up there looking out for any kind of problems, for invaders, for fire. If a fire comes up, you need to act on it immediately. There's no fire trucks or anything like that. And so you had these people up there keeping watch. And it's the watch that tells you the time. So that's why we call the thing, this mechanical device that tells us the time, the watch. Now, are we learning this? Are you spending your hard-earned money and effort and time to learn, you know, whatever, why is it called a watch or whatever it is, are you ever going to need that in your entire life at a job interview, at whatever it is? I'm sure no. But what happens is it keeps us thinking. It makes us see things on our own rather than accepting what the world has just given to us. You'll never need to know why, I'm sure, why North is up or the Greenland problem or anything like that. But what are we really learning? We're learning literally to see the world in a new way. Literally and also metaphorically. I don't think I'll cover geography this semester. I never do in an American history class. But like I said earlier, you know, about geometry, about foreign languages, why are we learning it? Why is it important? You know, just so you, especially now with things like MapQuest and your phones have maps and directions and all this kind of stuff, why on earth are we learning about geography? Well, it's been said without geography, we are literally lost. We find ourselves, like the poet Hausmann wrote, alone and afraid in a world we never made. Geography shows us what is this strange world in which we find ourselves and what is our place in it. I actually think of Pablo Picasso. Most of you have heard of Picasso, one of the most famous artists in the history of the world. And one of the things he would do is break things up because that would actually be a truer version of reality. If you were seeing a painting by Picasso, you might wonder, oh, give me a break. That's not real. That doesn't look accurate. How can that be right? But in fact, we are not seeing reality. Every day, every moment, when you, even if I was sitting in front of you right now and you were looking at me, you wouldn't be seeing me. You would be seeing a part of me. So if Picasso drew me, if Picasso did a portrait of me, he might do, for example, half of my face and then the other half, the back of my head, and then put those two together and maybe draw my foot coming out of one ear. Things like that. And you might say, oh, that's not real. Well, it would be more real than what you see on a day-to-day basis because it gives you a better, more complete version of me, of reality. And essentially, I think I'll close with this story, this anecdote about Quincy Jones. I don't know if you guys know who Quincy Jones is, but he is a very, very famous person in the music industry, highly cultured. He's been in the music industry for decades and decades and decades. And just to show you, people have said that in America, we need a minister of culture. Some people have said we need a minister of culture, just like we have a secretary of state, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Education. We need a Minister of Culture. And frankly, if you look at Miami, you know, things like that, we could really benefit from it. I've heard the music scene isn't bad, but the venues are very poor. There aren't many places. I mean, there's Ultra and things like that, but not much more. And here, if we had someone, if we had as much emphasis on art and music and literature and things like that as we do on things like warfare, what would our country be like? So people have always said, yo, we need a minister of culture. And most people would say it should be Quincy Jones. That's what most people were saying. So when he was, I believe, 24, he got a job in Paris. And he's an American, but he moved to Paris for this job, for the duration of the job. And I know about this because years ago, he came out with an autobiography and I was watching him in an interview. I think it was Charlie Rose, but I was watching him in an interview and he told this story. So he had moved to Paris for this job temporarily, and he winds up actually having lunch with Picasso. Now already this seems like an amazing story. Wow, having lunch with Picasso. And they have their lunch, and that's fine. And then the check came. Now who paid? When the bill came, what do you think happened? Who paid? Well, what happened is Picasso paid. What he did was he took his plate, rearranged the fish bones, did something with the sauces and things like that, and then he gave it to the waiter as payment. And the waiter accepted it. And yet when I try that at La Carreta, no, I don't do that. But what happens is this was a Picasso, a work by Picasso. Of course, the waiter took it. And I would find out much later in my life that actually Picasso did something similar to this quite a bit to impress women and things like that. When the check came, he'd doodle on a napkin and give it to the waiter and say, here, pay your kid's college tuition with this. Anyway, principles, what concepts do we derive from this? That all of life is but a canvas, and we are the artist, and we can create this amazing thing, which is life, out of what people consider garbage? Is it, no, we are not the artist, we are the canvas, and the world is the artist. Are we not everything that happens to us? The language we speak, the way we behave, the way we dress, isn't that because of our circumstances and how we've grown up? Aren't we just the canvas, as some would say in philosophy, a blank slate? Now, there are many different things and different interpretations that we could take, but that's not for me to tell you. That's really the one thing that I shouldn't tell you, because I may have said this, but I'm of the school of thought that the teacher cannot give truth to the student, because truth can only be found within the student. The teacher can only help the student find the truth for themselves. What should you major in? I don't know. Where should you transfer? I don't know. Who should you marry? Where should you move to? All these things, I have no idea. What I can do is help you make those decisions. I've spoken with some of you by phone about these different majors and the reputations they have and the requirements that come with them and everything like that. But ultimately, I don't know you well enough to know what's right for you. Oftentimes, I'm not absolutely sure what's best for me. So why would I be telling you what's right for you? We all have our own analysis to do and our own journey to take, let's say. And where we are going is shaped and defined by where we have been. In other words, the future is determined by the past. I've said during this lecture, I've said that history is a mirror. I've said that history is a window. I will also now say history is a door. Just like education, all we have to do is walk through it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Bye-bye.